See Pate standing behind him, holding an iron lantern. Under a short leather cloak, the armorer was bare from the waist up, his broad chest and thick arms covered with coarse black hair.
If you are come for your shield, she left it with me.
He looked Dunk up and down.
2 hands and 2 feet, I count. So it's to be trial by combat, is it?
A trial of 7. How did you know?
Well, they might have kissed you and made you a lord, but it didn't seem likely. And if it went the other way, you'd be short some parts. Now follow me.
His wagon was easy to distinguish by the sword and anvil painted on its side. Dunk followed Pate inside. The armorer hung the lantern on a hook, shrugged out of his wet cloak, and pulled a rough-spun tunic down over his head. A hinged board dropped down from one wall to make a table.
Sit,
he said, shoving a low stool toward him. Dunk sat.
Where did she go?
They make for Dorne, the girl's uncle. There's a wise man. Well gone is well forgot. Stay and be seen and be like the dragon remembers. Besides, he did not think she ought see you die.
Pate went to the far end of the wagon, rummaged about in the shadows a moment, and returned with the shield.
Your rim was old cheap steel, brittle and rusted, he said. I've made you a new one, twice as thick, and put some bends across the back. It will be heavier now, but stronger too. The girl did the paint.
She had made a better job of it than he could ever have hoped for. Even by lantern light, the sunset colors were rich and bright, the tree tall and strong and noble. The falling star was a bright slash of paint across the oaken sky. Yet now that Dunk held it in his hands, it seemed all wrong. The star was falling. What sort of sigil was that? Would he fall just as fast? And sunset heralds night.
I should have stayed with the chalice, he said miserably. It had wings, at least, to fly away. And Sir Arlen said the cup was full of faith and fellowship and good things to drink. This shield is all painted up like death.
The elm's alive,
Pate pointed out.
See how green the leaves are? Summer leaves, for certain. And I've seen shields blazoned with skulls and wolves and ravens, even angry men and bloody heads. They served well enough. And so will this. You know the old shield rhyme? Oak and iron guard me well.
Or else I'm dead and doomed to hell,
Dunk finished. He had not thought of that rhyme in years. The old man had taught it to him a long time ago.
How much do you want for the new rim and all? He asked Pate.
From you?
Pate scratched his beard.
A copper.
The rain had all but stopped as the first wan light suffused the eastern sky, but it had done its work. Lord Ashford's men had removed the barriers, and the tourney field was one great morass of gray-brown mud and torn grass. Tendrils of fog were writhing along the ground like pale white snakes as Dunk made his way back toward the lists. Steely Pate walked with him. The viewing stand had already begun to fill, the lords and ladies clutching their cloaks tight about them against the morning chill. Small folk were drifting toward the field as well, and hundreds of them already stood along the fence.
So many come to see me die,
thought Dunk bitterly, but he wronged them. A few steps farther on, a woman called out,
Good fortune to you!
An old man stepped up to take his hand and said,
May the gods give you strength, sir.
Then a begging brother in a tattered brown robe said a blessing on his sword, and a maid kissed his cheek.
They are for me? Why? He asked Pate. What am I to them?
A knight who remembered his vows, the smith said.
They found Raymond outside the challenger's paddock at the south end of the lists, waiting with his cousin's horse and Dunk's. Thunder tossed restlessly beneath the weight of Chinette, chamfron, and blanket of heavy mail. Pate inspected the armor and pronounced it good work, even though someone else had forged it. Wherever the armor had come from, Dunk was grateful. Then he saw the others, the one-eyed man with the salt-and-pepper beard, the young knight in the striped yellow and black surcoat with the beehives on the shield.
Robin Risling and Humphrey Beesbury, he thought in astonishment, and Sir Humphrey Harding as well.
Harding was mounted on Arion's red charger, now barded in his red and white diamonds. He went to them.
Sirs, I am in your debt.
The debt is Arion's,
Sir Humphrey Harding replied, and we mean to collect it.
I had heard your leg was broken.
You heard the truth, Harding said. I cannot walk, but so long as I can sit a horse, I can fight.
Raymond took Dunk aside.
I hoped Harding would want another chance at Arion, and he did. As it happens, the other Humphrey is his brother by marriage. Egg is responsible for Sir Robin, whom he knew from other tourneys. So you are five.
Six,
said Dunk in wonder, pointing. A knight was entering the paddock, his squire leading his charger behind him.
The Laughing Storm.
A head taller than Sir Raymond, and almost of a height with Dunk, Sir Lionel wore a cloth of gold surcoat, bearing the crowned stag of House Baratheon, and carried his antlered helm under his arm. Dunk reached for his hand.
Sir Lionel, I cannot thank you enough for coming, nor Sir Stefan for bringing you.
Sir Stefan,
Sir Lionel gave him a puzzled look.
It was your squire who came to me, the boy, Aegon. My own lad tried to chase him off, but he slipped between his legs and turned a flagon of wine over my head.
He laughed.
There's not been a trial of seven for more than 100 years. Do you know that? I was not about to miss a chance to fight the Kingsguard knights and tweak Prince Maker's nose in the bargain.
Six,
Dunk said hopefully to Raymond Fossaway as Sir Lionel joined the others.
Your cousin will bring the last, surely.
A roar went up from the crowd. At the north end of the meadow, a column of knights came trotting out of the river mist. The three Kingsguard came first, like ghosts in their gleaming white enamel armor, long white cloaks trailing behind them. Even their shields were white, blank and clean as a field of new-fallen snow. Behind rode Prince Makar and his sons. Arion was mounted on a dapple gray, orange and red flickering through the slashes in the horse's caparison at each stride. His brother's destrier was a smaller bay, armored in overlapping black and gold scales. A green silk plume trailed from Darren's helm. It was their father who made the most fearsome appearance, however. Black curved dragon teeth ran across his shoulders, along the crest of his helm and down his back, and the huge spiked mace strapped to his saddle was as deadly looking a weapon as Dunk had ever seen.
Six!
Raymond exclaimed suddenly.
They are only six!
It was true, Dunk saw.
Three black knights and three white. They are a man short as well.
Was it possible that Arion had not been able to find a seventh man? What would that mean? Would they fight six against six if neither found a seventh? Egg slipped up beside him as he was trying to puzzle it out.
Sir, it's time you donned your armor.
Thank you, squire. If you would be so good.
Steely Pate lent the lad a hand. Hauberk and gorget, greaves and gauntlet, coif and codpiece, they turned him into steel, checking each buckle and each clasp thrice. Sir Lionel sat sharpening his sword on a whetstone, while the Humphreys talked quietly, Sir Robin prayed, and Raymond Fossaway paced back and forth, wondering where his cousin had got to. Dunk was fully armored by the time Sir Stefan finally appeared.
Raymond, he called. My mail, if you please.
He had changed into a padded doublet to wear beneath his steel.
Sir Stefan, said Dunk, what of your friends? We need another knight to make our seven.
You need two, I fear,
Sir Stefan said. Raymond laced up the back of the hauberk.
My lord?
Dunk did not understand.
Two?
Sir Stefan picked up a gauntlet of fine lobstered steel and slid his left hand into it, flexing his fingers.
I see five here,
he said while Raymond fastened his sword belt.
Beesbury, Risling, Harding, Baratheon, and yourself.
And you,
said Dunk.
You're the sixth.
I am the seventh, said Sir Stefan, smiling. But for the other side, I fight with Prince Arian and the accusers.
Raymon had been about to hand his cousin his helm. He stopped as if struck.
No.
Yes,
Sir Stefan shrugged.
Sir Duncan understands, I am sure. I have a duty to my prince.
You told him to rely on you.
Raymon had gone pale.
Did I?
He took the helm from his cousin's hands.
No doubt I was sincere at the time. Bring me my horse.
Get him yourself, said Raymon angrily. If you think I wish any part of this, you're as thick as you are vile.
Vile?
Sir Stefan tisked.
Guard your tongue, Raymon. We're both apples from the same tree, and you are my squire. Or have you forgotten your vows?
No, have you forgotten yours? You swore to be a knight.
I shall be more than a knight before this day is done.
Lord Fossoway, I like the sound of that. Smiling, he pulled on his other gauntlet, turned away and crossed the paddock to his horse. Though the other defenders stared at him with contemptuous eyes, no one made a move to stop him. Dunk watched Sir Stefan lead his destrier back across the field. His hands coiled into fists, but his throat felt too raw for speech.
No words would move the likes of him, anyway.
Knight me.
Raymon put a hand on Dunk's shoulder and turned him.
I will take my cousin's place. Sir Duncan, knight me.
He went to one knee. Frowning, Dunk moved a hand to the hilt of his longsword, then hesitated.
Raymon, I should not.
You must. Without me, you are only five.
The lad has the truth of it,
said Sir Lionel Baratheon.
Do it, Sir Duncan. Any knight can make a knight.
Do you doubt my courage?
Raymon asked.
No, said Dunk. Not that, but...
Still he hesitated. A fanfare of trumpets cut the misty morning air. Egg came running up to them.
Sir, Lord Ashford summons you.
The laughing storm gave an impatient shake of the head.
Go to him, Sir Duncan. I'll give Squire Raymon his knighthood.
He slid his sword out of his sheath and shouldered Dunk aside.
Raymon of House Fossoway,
he began solemnly, touching the blade to the squire's right shoulder.
In the name of the warrior, I charge you to be brave.
The sword moved from his right shoulder to his left.
In the name of the father, I charge you to be just.
Back to the right.
In the name of the mother, I charge you to defend the young and innocent.
The left.
In the name of the maid, I charge you to protect all women.
Dunk left them there, feeling as relieved as he was guilty.
We are still one short,
he thought as Egg held thunder for him.
Where will I find another man?
He turned the horse and rode slowly toward the viewing stand, where Lord Ashford stood waiting. From the north end of the lists, Prince Arian advanced to meet him.
Sir Duncan,
he said cheerfully,
it would seem you have only five champions.
Six,
said Dunk.
Sir Lionel is knighting Raymon Fossoway. We will fight you six against seven.
Men had won at far worse odds, he knew. But Lord Ashford shook his head.
That is not permitted, sir. If you cannot find another knight to take your side, you must be declared guilty of the crimes of which you stand accused.
Guilty?
Thought Dunk.
Guilty of loosening a tooth, and for that I must die? My lord, I beg a moment.
You have it.
Dunk rode slowly along the fence. The viewing stand was crowded with knights.
My lords,
he called to them.
Do none of you remember Sir Arlan of Pennytree? I was his squire. We served many of you. Ate at your tables and slept in your halls.
He saw Manfred Dundarian seated in the highest tier.
Sir Arlan took a wound in your lord father's service.
The knight said something to the lady beside him, paying no heed. Dunk was forced to move on.
Lord Lannister, Sir Arlan unhorsed you once in tourney.
The Grey Lion examined his gloved hands, studiedly refusing to raise his eyes.
He was a good man, and he taught me how to be a knight. Not only sword and lance, but honor. A knight defends the innocent, he said. That's all I did. I need one more knight to fight beside me. One, that's all. Lord Karen. Lord Swan?
Lord Swan laughed softly as Lord Karen whispered in his ear. Dunk reined up before Sir Otho Bracken, lowering his voice.
Sir Otho, all know you for a great champion. Join us, I beg you. In the names of the old gods and the new, my cause is just.
That may be,
said the brute of Bracken, who had at least the grace to reply.
But it is your cause, not mine. I know you not, boy.
Heartsick, Dunk wheeled thunder and raced back and forth before the tiers of pale, cold men. Despair made him shout.
Are there no true knights among you?
Only silence answered. Across the field, Prince Arion laughed.
The dragon is not mocked, he called out.
Then came a voice.
I will take Sir Duncan's side.
A black stallion emerged from out of the river mists, a black knight on his back. Dunk saw the dragon's shield and the red enamel crest upon his helm with its three roaring heads.
The young prince! Gods be good, is it truly him?
Lord Ashford made the same mistake.
Prince Valar?
No.
The black knight lifted the visor of his helm.
I did not think to enter the lists at Ashford, my lord, so I brought no armor. My son was good enough to lend me his.
Prince Baylor smiled almost sadly. The accusers were thrown into confusion, Dunk could see. Prince Makar spurred his mount forward.
Brother, have you taken leave of your senses?
He pointed a mailed finger at Dunk.
This man attacked my son!
This man protected the weak, as every true knight must, replied Prince Baylor. Let the gods determine if he was right or wrong.
He gave a tug on his reins, turned Valar's huge black destrier, and trotted to the south end of the field. Dunk brought Thunder up beside him, and the other defenders gathered round them, Robin Risling and Sir Lionel the Humphreys.
Good men all, but are they good enough? Where is Raymond?
Sir Raymond, if you please.
He cantered up, a grim smile lighting his face beneath his plumed helm.
My pardon, sir. I needed to make a small change to my sigil, lest I be mistaken for my dishonorable cousin.
He showed them all his shield. The polished golden field remained the same, and the Fossaway apple, but this apple was green instead of red.
I fear I am still not ripe, but better green than wormy, eh?
Sir Lionel left, and Dunk grinned despite himself. Even Prince Baylor seemed to approve. Lord Ashford's septon had come to the front of the viewing stand and raised his crystal to call the throng to prayer.
Attend me, all of you, Baylor said quietly.
The accusers will be armed with heavy war lances for the first charge. Lances of ash, 8 feet long, banded against splitting and tipped with a steel point sharp enough to drive through plate with the weight of a war horse behind it.
We shall use the same,
said Sir Humphrey Beesbury. Behind him, the septon was calling on the seven to look down and judge this dispute and grant victory to the men whose cause was just.
No,
Baylor said.
We will arm ourselves with tourney lances instead.
Tourney lances are made to break,
objected Raymond.
They are also made 12 feet long. If our points strike home, theirs cannot touch us. Aim for helm or chest. In a tourney, it is a gallant thing to break your lance against a foe's shield, but here it may well mean death. If we can unhorse them and keep our own saddles, the advantage is ours.
He glanced to Dunk.
If Sir Duncan is killed, it is considered that the gods have judged him guilty, and the contest is over. If both of his accusers are slain, or withdraw their accusations, the same is true. Elsewise, all seven of one side or the other must perish or yield for the trial to end.
Prince Daeron will not fight,
Dunk said.
Not well, anyway,
laughed Sir Lionel.
Against that, we have three of the white swords to contend with.
Baylor took that calmly.
My brother erred when he demanded that the Kingsguard fight for his son. Their oath forbids them to harm a prince of the blood. Fortunately, I am such. He gave them a faint smile. Keep the others off me long enough, and I shall deal with the Kingsguard.
My prince, is that chivalrous?
Asked Sir Lionel Baratheon as the Septon was finishing his invocation.
The gods will let us know, said Baylor Breakspear.
A deep, expectant silence had fallen across Ashford Meadow. 80 yards away, Arion's gray stallion trumpeted with impatience and pawed the muddy ground. Thunder was very still by comparison. He was an older horse, veteran of 50 fights, and he knew what was expected of him. Egg handed Dunk up his shield.
May the gods be with you, sir,
the boy said. The sight of his elm tree and shooting star gave him heart. Dunk slid his left arm through the strap and tightened his fingers around the grip.
Oak and iron guard me well, or else I'm dead and doomed to hell.
Steely Pate brought his lance to him, but Egg insisted that it must be he who put it into Dunk's hand. To either side, his companions took up their own lances and spread out in a long line. Prince Baylor was to his right and Sir Lionel to his left, but the narrow eye slit of the great helm limited Dunk's vision to what was directly ahead of him. The viewing stand was gone, and likewise the small folk crowding the fence. There was only the muddy field, the pale blowing mist, the river, town and castle to the north, and the princeling on his gray charger with flames on his helm and a dragon on his shield. Dunk watched Arion's squire hand him a war lance, 8 feet long and black as night.
He will put that through my heart if he can.
A horn sounded. For a heartbeat, Dunk sat as still as a fly in amber, though all the horses were moving. A stab of panic went through him.
I have forgotten, he thought wildly. I have forgotten all. I will shame myself. I will lose everything.
Thunder saved him. The big brown stallion knew what to do, even if his rider did not. He broke into a slow trot. Dunk's training took over then. He gave the warhorse a light touch of spur and couched his lance. At the same time, he swung his shield until it covered most of the left side of his body. He held it at an angle to deflect blows away from him.
Oak and iron guard me well, or else I'm dead and doomed to hell.
The noise of the crowd was no more than the crash of distant waves. Thunder slid into a gallop. Dunk's teeth jarred together with the violence of the pace. He pressed his heels down, tightening his legs with all his strength and letting his body become part of the motion of the horse beneath.
I am Thunder and Thunder is me. We are one beast. We are joined. We are one.
The air inside his helm was already so hot he could scarce breathe. In a tourney joust, his foe would be to his left across the tilting barrier, and he would need to swing his lance across Thunder's neck. The angle made it more likely that the wood would split on impact, but this was a deadlier game they played today. With no barriers dividing them, the destriers charged straight at one another. Prince Baylor's huge black was much faster than Thunder, and Dunk glimpsed him pounding ahead through the corner of his eye slit. He sensed more than saw the others.
They do not matter. Only Arion matters, only him.
He watched the dragon come, spatters of mud sprayed back from the hooves of Prince Arion's gray, and Dunk could see the horse's nostrils flaring. The black lance still angled upward. A knight who holds his lance high and brings it on line at the last moment always risks lowering it too far, the old man had told him. He brought his own point to bear on the center of the princeling's chest.
My lance is part of my arm, he told himself. It's my finger, a wooden finger. All I need do is touch him with my long wooden finger.
He tried not to see the sharp iron point at the end of Arion's black lance, growing larger with every stride.
The dragon! Look at the dragon, he thought.
The great three-headed beast covered the prince's shield, red wings and gold fire.
No, look only where you mean to strike,
he remembered suddenly. But his lance had already begun to slide off line. Dunk tried to correct, but it was too late.
He saw his point strike Arion's shield, taking the dragon between two of its heads, gouging into a gout of painted flame. At the muffled crack, he felt thunder recoil under him, trembling with the force of the impact, and half a heartbeat later something smashed into his side with awful force. The horses slammed together violently, armor crashing and clanging as thunder stumbled and Dunk's lance fell from his hand. Then he was past his foe, clutching at his saddle in a desperate effort to keep his seat. Thunder lurched sideways in the sloppy mud, and Dunk felt his rear legs slip out from under. They were sliding, spinning, and then the stallion's hindquarters slapped down hard. "Up!" Dunk roared, lashing out with his spurs. "Up, Thunder!" And somehow the old warhorse found his feet again. He could feel a sharp pain under his rib, and his left arm was being pulled down. Arion had driven his lance through oak, wool, and steel. 3 feet of splintered ash and sharp iron stuck from his side. Dunk reached over with his right hand, grasped the lance just below the head, clenched his teeth, and pulled it out of him with one savage yank. Blood followed, seeping through the rings of his mail to redden his surcoat. The world swam and he almost fell. Dimly, through the pain, he could hear voices calling his name. His beautiful shield was useless now. He tossed it aside, elm tree, shooting star, broken lance and all, and drew his sword, but he hurt so much he did not think he could swing it. Turning Thunder in a tight circle, he tried to get a sense of what was happening elsewhere on the field. Sir Humphrey Harding clung to the neck of his mount, obviously wounded. The other Sir Humphrey lay motionless in a lake of blood-stained mud, a broken lance protruding from his groin. He saw Prince Baylor gallop past, lance still intact, and drive one of the king's guard from his saddle. Another of the White Knights was already down, and Makar had been unhorsed as well. The third of the king's guard was fending off Sir Robin Risling. "Arion! Where is Arion?" The sound of drumming hooves behind him made Dunk turn his head sharply. Thunder bugled and reared, hooves lashing out futilely as Arion's gray stallion barreled into him at full gallop. This time there was no hope of recovery. His longsword went spinning from his grasp, and the ground rose up to meet him. He landed with a bruising impact that jarred him to the bone. Pain stabbed through him, so sharp he sobbed. For a moment it was all he could do to lie there. The taste of blood filled his mouth. Dunk the Lunk thought he could be a knight. He knew he had to find his feet again or die. Groaning, he forced himself to hands and knees. He could not breathe, nor could he see. The eye slit of his helm was packed with mud. Lurching blindly to his feet, Dunk scraped at the mud with a mailed finger. "There, that's..." Through his fingers, he glimpsed a dragon flying and a spiked morning star whirling on the end of a chain. Then his head seemed to burst to pieces. When his eyes opened, he was on the ground again, sprawled on his back. The mud had all been knocked from his helm, but now one eye was closed by blood. Above was nothing but dark gray sky. His face throbbed, and he could feel cold, wet metal pressing in against cheek and temple. "He broke my head, and I'm dying." What was worse was the others who would die with him, Raymond and Prince Baylor and the rest. "I failed them. I am no champion. I'm not even a hedge knight. I am nothing." He remembered Prince Darren boasting that no one could lie insensible in the mud as well as he did. "He never saw Dunk the Lunk, though, did he?" The shame was worse than the pain. The dragon appeared above him. 3 heads it had, and wings bright as flame, red and yellow and orange. It was laughing.
"Are you dead yet, hedge knight?"
it asked.
"Cry for quarter and admit your guilt, and perhaps I'll only claim a hand and a foot." "Oh, and those teeth. But what are a few teeth? A man like you can live years on peas porridge."
The dragon laughed again.
"No? Eat this, then."
The spiked ball whirled round and round the sky and fell toward his head as fast as a shooting star. Dunk rolled. Where he found the strength he did not know, but he found it. He rolled into Arion's legs, threw a steel-clad arm around his thigh, dragged him cursing into the mud, and rolled on top of him. "Let him swing his bloody morning star now!" The prince tried forcing the lip of his shield up at Dunk's head, but his battered helm took the brunt of the impact. Arion was strong, but Dunk was stronger, and larger, and heavier as well. He grabbed hold of the shield with both hands and twisted until the straps broke. Then he brought it down on top of the princeling's helm, again and again and again, smashing the enameled flames of his crest. The shield was thicker than Dunk's had been, solid oak banded with iron. A flame broke off, then another. The prince ran out of flames long before Dunk ran out of blows. Arion finally let go of the handle of his useless morning star and clawed for the poniard at his hip. He got it free of its sheath, but when Dunk wanged his hand with the shield, the knife sailed off into the mud. He could vanquish Sir Duncan the Tall, but not Dunk of Fleabottom. The old man had taught him jousting and swordplay, but this sort of fighting he had learned earlier, in shadowy winds and crooked alleys behind the city's wine sinks. Dunk flung the battered shield away and wrenched up the visor of Arion's helm. "A visor is a weak point," he remembered Steely Pate saying. The prince had all but ceased to struggle. His eyes were purple and full of terror. Dunk had a sudden urge to grab one and pop it like a grape between two steel fingers, but that would not be knightly.
"Yield!"
he shouted.
"I yield,"
the dragon whispered, pale lips barely moving. Dunk blinked down at him. For a moment he could not credit what his ears had heard.
"Is it done, then?"
He turned his head slowly from side to side, trying to see. His vision slit was partly closed by the blow that had smashed in the left side of his face. He glimpsed Prince Makara, mace in hand, trying to fight his way to his son's side. Baylor Breakspear was holding him off. Dunk lurched to his feet and pulled Prince Arion up after him. Fumbling at the lacings of his helm, he tore it off and flung it away. At once he was drowned in sights and sounds, grunts and curses, the shouts of the crowd, one stallion screaming while another raced riderless across the field. Everywhere steel rang on steel. Raymond and his cousin were slashing at each other in front of the viewing stand, both afoot. Their shields were splintered ruins, the green apple and the red both hacked to tinder. One of the Kingsguard knights was carrying a wounded brother from the field. They both looked alike in their white armor and white cloaks. The third of the white knights was down, and the laughing storm had joined Prince Baylor against Prince Makar. Mace, battle axe, and longsword clashed and clanged, ringing against helm and shield. Makar was taking three blows for every one he landed, and Dunk could see that it would be over soon.
"I must make an end to it before more of us are killed."
Prince Arion made a sudden dive for his morning star. Dunk kicked him in the back and knocked him face down, then grabbed hold of one of his legs and dragged him across the field. By the time he reached the viewing stand where Lord Ashford sat, the bright prince was brown as a privy. Dunk hauled him onto his feet and rattled him, shaking some of the mud onto Lord Ashford and the fair maid.
"Tell him!"
Arion Brightflame spit out a mouthful of grass and dirt.
"I withdraw my accusation."
Afterward, Dunk could not have said whether he walked from the field under his own power or had required help. He hurt everywhere, and some places worse than others.
"I am a knight now, in truth?"
he remembered wondering.
"Am I a champion?"
Egg helped him remove his greaves and gorget, and Raymond as well, even Steely Pate. He was too dazed to tell them apart. They were fingers and thumbs and voices. Pate was the one complaining, Dunk knew.
"Look what he's done to me armor,"
he said.
"All dented and banged and scratched. I asked you, why do I bother? I'll have to cut that mail off him, I fear."
"Raymond,"
Dunk said urgently, clutching at his friend's hands.
"The others, how did they fare?"
He had to know.
"Has anyone died?"
"Beesbury," Raymond said. "Slain by Donald of Duskendale in the first charge. Sir Humphrey is gravely wounded as well. The rest of us are bruised and bloody no more, save for you."
"And them? The accusers?"
"Sir Willem Wilde of the Kingsguard was carried from the field insensate, and I think I cracked a few of my cousin's ribs. At least I hope so."
"And Prince Darren?"
Dunk blurted.
"Did he survive?"
"Once Sir Robin unhorsed him, he lay where he fell.
He may have broken a foot. His own horse trod on him while running loose about the field.
Dazed and confused as he was, Dunk felt a huge sense of relief.
His dream was wrong then. The dead dragon, unless Arion died.
He didn't, though, did he?
No,
said Egg.
You spared him, don't you remember?
I suppose. Already his memories of the fight were becoming confused and vague.
One moment I feel drunk. The next it hurts so bad I know I'm dying.
They made him lie down on his back and talked over him as he gazed up into the roiling gray sky. It seemed to Dunk that it was still morning. He wondered how long the fight had taken.
Gods be good. The lance point drove the rings deep into his flesh, he heard Raymond saying. It will mortify unless...
Get him drunk and pour some boiling oil into it, someone suggested. That's how the maesters do it. Wine.
The voice had a hollow, metallic ring to it.
Not oil. That will kill him. Boiling wine. I'll send Maester Yormwell to have a look at him when he's done tending my brother.
A tall knight stood above him in black armor, dinted and scarred by many blows.
Prince Baylor!
The scarlet dragon on his helm had lost a head, both wings, and most of its tail.
Your grace,
Dunk said.
I am your man. Please, your man.
My man.
The black knight put a hand on Raymond's shoulder to steady himself.
I need good men, Sir Duncan. The realm...
His voice sounded oddly slurred. Perhaps he'd bit his tongue. Dunk was very tired. It was hard to stay awake.
Your man,
he murmured once more. The prince moved his head slowly from side to side.
Sir Raymond, my helm, if you'd be so kind. Visor's cracked. And my fingers feel like wood.
At once, your grace.
Raymond took the prince's helm in both hands and grunted.
Good man Pate, a hand.
Steely Pate dragged over a mounting stool.
It's crushed down at the back, your grace, toward the left side. Smashed into the gorge. Good steel, this, to stop such a blow.
Brother's mace, most like, Baylor said thickly. He's strong.
He winced.
That feels queer.
Here it comes.
Pate lifted the battered helm away.
Gods be good. Oh gods preserve.
Dunk saw something red and wet fall out of the helm. Someone was screaming high and terrible. Against the bleak gray sky swayed a tall prince in black armor with only half a skull. He could see red blood and pale bone beneath and something else, something blue-gray and pulpy. A queer, troubled look passed across Baylor Breakspear's face, like a cloud passing before a sun. He raised his hand and touched the back of his head with two fingers, oh so lightly. And then he fell. Dunk caught him.
Up!
They say he said, just as he had with thunder in the melee.
Up! Up!
But he never remembered that afterward, and the prince did not rise. Baylor of House Targaryen, Prince of Dragonstone, Hand of the King, Protector of the Realm, and heir apparent to the Iron Throne of the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros, went to the fire in the yard of Ashford Castle on the north bank of River Cockleswent. Other great houses might choose to bury their dead in the dark earth or sink them in the cold green sea, but the Targaryens were the blood of the dragon, and their ends were writ in flame. He had been the finest knight of his age, and some argued that he should have gone to face the dark clad in mail and plate, a sword in his hand. In the end, though, his royal father's wishes prevailed, and Daeron II had a peaceable nature. When Dunk shuffled past Baylor's bier, the prince wore a black velvet tunic with the three-headed dragon picked out in scarlet thread upon his breast. Around his throat was a heavy gold chain. His sword was sheathed by his side, but he did wear a helm, a thin golden helm with an open visor so men could see his face. Valar, the young prince, stood vigil at the foot of the bier while his father lay in state. He was a shorter, slimmer, handsomer version of his sire, without the twice-broken nose that had made Baylor seem more human than royal. Valar's hair was brown, but a bright streak of silver gold ran through it. The sight of it reminded Dunk of Arion, but he knew that that was not fair. Egg's hair was growing back as bright as his brother's, and Egg was a decent enough lad for a prince. When he stopped to offer awkward sympathies, well larded with thanks, Prince Valar blinked cool blue eyes at him and said,
"My father was only 39. He had it in him to be a great king, the greatest since Aegon the Dragon. Why would the gods take him and leave you?"
He shook his head.
"Be gone with you, Sir Duncan. Be gone."
Wordless, Dunk limped from the castle, down to the camp by the green pool. He had no answer for Valar, nor for the questions he asked himself. The maesters and the boiling wine had done their work, and his wound was healing cleanly, though there would be a deep, puckered scar between his left arm and his nipple. He could not see the wound without thinking of Baylor.
"He saved me once with his sword, and once with a word, even though he was a dead man as he stood there."
The world made no sense when a great prince died so a hedge knight might live. Dunk sat beneath his elm and stared morosely at his foot. When four guardsmen in the royal livery appeared in his camp late one day, he was sure they had come to kill him after all. Too weak and weary to reach for a sword, he sat with his back to the elm, waiting.
"Our prince begs the favor of a private word."
"Which prince?"
asked Dunk, wary.
"This prince,"
a brusque voice said before the captain could answer. Maegar Targaryen walked out from behind the elm. Dunk got slowly to his feet.
"What would he have of me now?"
Maekar motioned, and the guards vanished as suddenly as they had appeared. The prince studied him a long moment, then turned and paced away from him to stand beside the pool, gazing down at his reflection in the water.
"I have sent Arion to Lys,"
he announced abruptly.
"A few years in the Free Cities may change him for the better."
Dunk had never been to the Free Cities, so he did not know what to say to that. He was pleased that Arion was gone from the Seven Kingdoms and hoped he never came back, but that was not a thing you told a father of his son. He stood silent. Prince Maegar turned to face him.
"Some men will say I meant to kill my brother. The gods know it is a lie, but I will hear the whispers till the day I die. And it was my mace that dealt the fatal blow, I have no doubt. The only other foes he faced in the melee were three Kingsguard, whose vows forbade them to do any more than defend themselves. So it was me. Strange to say, I do not recall the blow that broke his skull. Is that a mercy or a curse?"
"Some of both, I think."
From the way he looked at Dunk, it seemed the prince wanted an answer.
"I could not say, Your Grace."
Perhaps he should have hated Maekar, but instead he felt a queer sympathy for the man.
"You swung the mace, my lord, but it was for me Prince Baylor died. So I killed him too as much as you."
"Yes," the prince admitted.
"You'll hear them whisper as well. The king is old. When he dies, Valar will climb the Iron Throne in place of his father. Each time a battle is lost or a crop fails, the fools will say, 'Baylor would not have let it happen. But the Hedge Knight killed him.'"
Dunk could see the truth in that.
"If I had not fought, you would have had my hand off, and my foot. Sometimes I sit under that tree, there, and look at my feet, and ask if I couldn't have spared one. How could my foot be worth a prince's life? And the other two as well, the Humphreys. They were good men too."
Sir Humphrey Harding had succumbed to his wounds only last night.
"And what answer does your tree give you?"
"None that I can hear. But the old man, Sir Arlen, every day at evenfall he'd say, 'I wonder what the morrow will bring.' He never knew, no more than we do. Well, mightn't it be that some morrow will come when I'll have need of that foot?
when the realm will have need of that foot even more than a prince's life?
Makar chewed on that a time, mouth clenched beneath the silvery pale beard that made his face seem so square.
It's not bloody likely, he said harshly. The realm has as many hedge knights as hedges, and all of them have feet.
If your grace has a better answer, I'd want to hear it.
Makar frowned.
It may be that the gods have a taste for cruel japes, or
perhaps there are no gods.
Perhaps none of this had any meaning. I'd ask the High Septon, but the last time I went to him, he told me that no man can truly understand the workings of the gods. Perhaps he should try sleeping under a tree.
He grimaced. My youngest son seems to have grown fond of you, sir. It is time he was a squire, but he tells me he will serve no knight but you. He is an unruly boy, as you will have noticed. Will you have him?
Me?
Dunk's mouth opened and closed, and opened again.
Aegon, I mean, he is a good lad, but your grace, I know you honor me, but I am only a hedge knight.
That can be changed, said Makar. Aegon is to return to my castle at Summerhall. There is a place there for you, if you wish. A knight of my household? You'll swear your sword to me, and Aegon can squire for you. While you train him, my master-at-arms will finish your own training.
The prince gave him a shrewd look.
Your Sir Arlen did all he could for you, I have no doubt. But you still have much to learn.
I know, my lord.
Dunk looked about him. At the green grass and the reeds, the tall elm, the ripples dancing across the surface of the sunlit pool. Another dragonfly was moving across the water, or perhaps it was the same one.
What shall it be, Dunk?
He asked himself.
Dragonflies? Or dragons?
A few days ago, he would have answered at once. It was all he had ever dreamed. But now that the prospect was at hand, it frightened him.
Just before Prince Baylor died, I swore to be his man.
Presumptuous of you, said Makar. What did he say?
That the realm needed good men.
That's true enough. What of it?
I will take your son as squire, your grace, but not at Summerhall. Not for a year or two. He's seen sufficient of castles, I would judge. I'll have him only if I can take him on the road with me.
He pointed to Old Chestnut.
He'll ride my steed, wear my old cloak, and he'll keep my sword sharp and my mail scoured. We'll sleep in inns and stables, and now and again in the halls of some landed knight or lesser lordling, and maybe under trees when we must.
Prince Makar gave him an incredulous look.
Did the trial addle your wits, man? Aegon is a prince of the realm, the blood of the dragon. Princes are not made for sleeping in ditches and eating hard salt beef.
He saw Dunk hesitate.
What is it you're afraid to tell me? Say what you will, sir.
Darren never slept in a ditch, I'll wager, said Dunk very quietly. And all the beef that Arion ever ate was thick and rare and bloody, like as not.
Makar Targaryen, Prince of Summerhall, regarded Dunk of Fleabottom for a long time, his jaw working silently beneath his silvery beard. Finally he turned and walked away, never speaking a word. Dunk heard him riding off with his men. When they were gone, there was no sound but the faint thrum of the dragonfly's wings as it skimmed across the water. The boy came the next morning, just as the sun was coming up. He wore old boots, brown breeches, a brown wool tunic, and an old traveler's cloak.
My lord father says I am to serve you.
Serve you, sir, Dunk reminded him.
You can start by saddling the horses. Chestnut is yours. Treat her kindly. I don't want to find you on Thunder unless I put you there.
Egg went to get the saddles.
Where are we going, sir?
Dunk thought for a moment.
I have never been over the Red Mountains.
Would you like to have a look at Dawn? Egg grinned.
I hear they have good puppet shows, he said.